group recalled 10 books. These were books that had to do with, you know, social psychology and social science and how to better yourself. And there was a group that was asked to recall the 10 Commandments. And then both of them were given tests where they could cheat. The ones who read the 10 Commandments didn't cheat at all. The ones that read the other books, they cheated. They took another group of atheists this time. They reminded them of the school honor codes and, you know, all these different things instead of the 10 Commandments. They got the same result, cheating. So 10 Commandments, they wouldn't cheat. No 10 Commandments, they would cheat. Then they reran the experiment, even on a group of self-declared atheists, asking them to swear on the Bible. And even those atheists did not cheat, the ones that looked at the 10 Commandments. There seems to be something that happens when people even see the 10 Commandments.
The Lineage Journey Podcast, unscripted conversations that aim to help you on the journey of discovering your lineage. Join us as we take a deeper look into past lineage episodes and see the lessons we can learn for today.
Hi there, I'd like to welcome you to this podcast with Lineage Journey. Today we have a guest in the studio. We've had him before. We have Pastor Don McIntosh from Weimar University. Pastor Don McIntosh is the pastor of the Weimar University Church, as well as holding a few other hats on his head. What are some of those other hats you hold?
Well, I'm a teacher and I'm a counselor. And basically that's it.
Okay. And he's married and a father of four children, ranging in age from 13 to 22, I believe. So we're glad to have you here with us.
Thank you.
And I just saw you a few weeks ago in England. And yeah. I think we're going to talk a little bit about some of those things coming up. But this podcast, we're talking about the commandments and the Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand, well, maybe you'll talk a little bit more about it. But you've written a book about this, haven't you, or that touches on some of these themes, right?
It touches a bit. It's called The Law and Its Logic, Where Atheists and Christians Agree. And fascinatingly enough, you know, a lot of people that I work with in my counseling hat are depressed, and they're many times atheist or agnostic, because if there is a God, what's he doing for them? And, you know, so they have that background. And
okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to kind of go back and look at the commandments in the Reformation. As Christians, we believe the commandments are important. They are brought to us in Exodus chapter 20. In detail, and then we see them reiterated throughout the Old Testament, throughout the New Testament. But as we go to the Reformation was a process of the church rediscovering the truths of God's Word. I guess that's a statement I'm making. Would you agree with that in terms of,
sure,
in essence,
sure,
what it is?
And one of the heart of that understanding of Scriptures, you know, according to Wycliffe and Huss and Martin Luther, I mean, listen to Martin Luther every morning. And whenever else I have time, I read and recite word for word the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments.
Hmm.
You will never offer up any incense or other savor more potent against the devil than to occupy yourself with God's commandments and words, and to speak, sing, and meditate on them. This is indeed the true holy water, the song which routs the devil and puts him to fight, or flight, rather. This much is certain. Anyone who knows the Ten Commandments perfectly knows the entire Scriptures.
Wow.
In all affairs and circumstances, he can counsel, help, comfort, judge, make decisions in both spiritual and temporal matters. He's qualified to sit in judgment upon all doctrines, estates, persons, laws, and everything else in the world. So he's saying that, yeah, Bible needs to be restored, but the core of the Bible is the Ten Commandments.
Hmm. So you mentioned Martin Luther. Who were some of the other big leaders, you'd say, in the Reformation?
Well, of course, Martin Luther is the 1500s, right? But before that, you have John Wycliffe.
Mm-hmm.
The law of the Scriptures are most clearly expressed in the Ten Commandments of Exodus 20. It's Christ's law of love. John Huss.
Mm-hmm. From Bohemia.
Yeah, remember, he went to the Council of Constance. On the way to the Council of Constance, where he was going to be martyred, at every place he stopped, he left a copy of the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments. Every single inn.
Hmm.
He said, there's one thing I want to lead with you. And he was, of course, there. That was Council of Constance. There were three popes.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't think they were going to solve the schism. Once they did, then the people that wanted to reform things had to be killed. That was Hus, you know, and Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
But he really thought what they needed to hear was about the Ten Commandments.
Mm.
And, you know, at each inn he stayed, he left behind a printed copy of the Ten Commandments. And then, you know, moving more to the Reformation, you have Henry VIII, who's one of his wives, married, divorced, survived, married, divorced, died. The one who died, Anne Boleyn.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, I said my prayers like every good Christian woman should and endeavored to obey the Ten Commandments. And so when she talked about God to Henry VIII, she was always referencing the Ten Commandments. And just when I was at Linda's Farm recently, which we'll talk about in another program, which is an island that was mm-hmm. known for Reformation, there was a whole CD of her songs and different things. And one of them even alluded to the Ten Commandments. So listen to this. Martin Luther, he said, you know, he commended that Christians should pray the Ten Commandments and even wrote a hymn for them. So he says, when you come into church, you need to kneel down, say the Lord's Prayer, but also sing the Ten Commandments, you know. So here you have in all these Reformation churches, you have Fox's Book of Martyrs. That's mm-hmm. there. That replaces the saints of the Catholics. These are all the people mm-hmm. that were martyred for us. So you have the Ten Commandments that replaces the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually, get this, you know, during Elizabethan England, which is a little bit later after the Reformation starts, in a book called The Reformation of the Decalogue, every church in the kingdom was required to display the text of the Ten Commandments during the reign of Elizabeth. And the reason was, they said, boards should sit at the east end of the church in the same place that the sacrament did hang. So it was taking the place of the Mass, the sacrament, and this was a spatial substitution of the body of Christ for the Word of God, a powerful statement. This is from this book about the changing priorities of the post-Reformation church from sacramental to word-based piety and worship, as well as the centrality of the Ten Commandments to the post-Reformation theology and religious practice. So here you have the Reformers. They say, hey, we got to get back to the Bible. The core of the Bible is the Ten Commandments. And then you have that now formalized in the next generation, put the commandments at every single church in England. So then you start seeing, you know, I don't know if you saw these pictures I emailed you, but
yeah, I did.
You see this one, the Ten Commandments is the basis of the undergirding of the monarchy. Here's a church. It has all the, you know, insignia of the monarchy, the crown and everything and the shield. But underneath is the Ten Commandments. It's saying, look, the Ten Commandments undergird the monarchy. Mm-hmm. And that's what Luther taught as well. He says, look, you need to be based on the Word of God. Then the Ten Commandments and another one are in the middle, supporting with text from the New Testament in a kind of a board that folded up. And then the other one I like is the Ten Commandments with pictures describing and illustrating them for the illiterate. So, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery. You got two people in bed together and they're looking at that and they're actually educating people as to what's right and wrong. Morality of the kingdom is seen in pictures and in actual sandwich boards, you might say, or boards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every church in the kingdom was required to display the text of the Ten Commandments. And there was about 9,000 churches at that time.
Wow.
And now there's only 30 boards left of those. But they still have 30 different churches, and I have them all listed, I guess, document.
Yeah.
In Norfolk, there's a bunch of them in Shropshire, a bunch of them in Somerset. Suffolk, there's one in Sussex. Even one of the, in Cumbria, we have a church in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination that has one of these boards in the church. And so, but these are historical documentation of this time period where the Reformation was driven by the memorization and meditation on the Ten Commandments. Amazing.
It is, because we don't often hear that so much, really.
No, you don't hear it at all. But this was so pronounced. This was the Reformation. And the Reformation came, according to Hus, according to Wycliffe, according to Luther, according to Henry VIII, who fancied himself as a reformer.
Bit of a fraud.
Yes, right. But, you know.
He got a few things going.
He's large and in charge in England, at least. They all said, yeah, this is it. Kneel down when you come in. Say the Ten Commandments. Sing the Ten Commandments. Everybody should know them.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Now, in England today, of course, it's not like that. In America today, it's not necessarily like that. And there was this shift. You know, you have a shift over the centuries. Now, like someone like Freud and then other people, they wanted to move away from the moral ideas of the Ten Commandments, which they thought caused neurosis and diseases, and they wanted to focus on science, right? Forgetting, again, from English history, that some of the greatest scientists
were Christian,
and based everything on the study of the Word. Newton, you know, he did more reading of the books of Daniel and Revelation than anything else, and he was trying to prove the scriptures right with his scientific theorems. So today, let me give you this statistic. It's interesting. In England today, you have people agreeing with the Ten Commandments in England. This is just a poll from last year. Thou shalt not commit murder. 93% of Brits believe that. You should not steal. 93% of Brits believe that. You shall not bear false witness, 87. You shall not commit adultery. You'd think that'd be pretty low, but it's 73%. Honor your father and your mother. You'd think, again, it'd be low, but it's 69%. You should not covet. That's 61%, right? So that's the moral fabric of the UK even today. If you knock in any house and you talk about those 61%.
Those are like the last five commandments, aren't they?
So those are the last five commandments, last six commandments, you might say. And then, of course, you look at the first four. Here's the interesting thing. You look at the first four, only 31% say don't worship idols. 23% don't use the Lord's name in vain. A lot of cussing going on, you know. I'm the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Only 20%. And the lowest, both for Americans and Brits. In fact, the statistics in America are not that much different. They actually skew almost exactly the same. The lowest regarded commandment is the Sabbath commandment. And that's fascinating because these reformers like Columba, Columbanus, they all were Sabbatarian. And they all staunchly believe that. Now, here's the thing. Here's my contention, okay? Go back to this just for a minute. Okay, how's it been working out? I mean, they got rid in their minds of the first five commandments, right? If you would ask a Brit today, you think the commandments are important? If you didn't say it right, they say, no, it's not important. But what's happening in Britain, the same thing in America, depression is the most prevalent mental health disorder, 1 in 6 adults in the UK. 52% of employees of any company, or most companies, they did a survey of numerous companies, are experiencing depression. 33% of employees aged 25 to 34. So these are young people. They're depressed. And only 9% are seeking help. Could reintroducing the moral code found in the Ten Commandments offer a window into the treatment of this depression and anxiety? You know, in other words, they don't want to experience these last six commandments, but they're actually not listening to the first five, which hold the answer. Because the commandments are like this, all right? In my book, I go through this. The last five commandments diagnose why people are depressed and anxious, and the first five commandments show you how to treat it. So here you have in both America and England, they want no depression and anxiety, but they don't know about, or they have forgotten, the cure, which was what the reformers were talking about. And some of the reformers, you know, you had the reformers, then you had the stepchildren of the Reformation, you know, the so-called magisterial reformers, but then you had the stepchildren of the Reformation that discovered actually the things that directly, you know, link with the first five commandments.
So just to reiterate for our listeners, the last five commandments deal with our relationship with each other.
Yeah.
Humankind, so to speak, and the first first four commandments.
Is the vertical relationship with God.
Between us and God.
Yeah.
And so people have no issue, so to speak, with the second table, the last five or six commandments.
And they don't want that to happen. They want to be killed. They don't want to have their wife sleeping with someone else. They don't want any of that stuff. But they simply are powerless to do that without help from God. Is really.
So this was like, the Reformation was a drive to bring all of this back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, let's say it this way. In the Reformation, you had the Catholics and Protestants that would agree with the Ten Commandments in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
One said you could do them. The other said there's no way you could do them without the grace of God. The only, one said righteousness by faith. One said righteousness by works.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Tyndale bringing that up, you know, William Tyndale, 1527, we, saith he, are by nature children of wrath, which thing the law doth but utter only and helpeth us not, yea, requireth impossible things of us. Like Martin Luther said, the Ten Commandments that are reiterated in the Sermon on the Mount are the Ten Commandments of the Old Testament times 50 because they look at the Spirit. So going on with Tyndale, the law, when it commandeth that thou shalt not lust, gives you no power so to do, but damneth thee because you can't do it. So all the reformers did with that was they said, okay, it damns you, so who do you need? You need Jesus because he's the only one that can help you. He can live in you. He can do this in your life.
Hmm.
So you know, if you want me to, I'll go through now these Ten Commandments and just give kind of a model of how they work.
Let's pause for it for a second. I think we'll come. I just want to kind of throw a spanner in the works, so to speak. You've read quotes from Anne Boleyn, Luther, Wycliffe, Huss, Tyndale. These are strong reformers, like we'd say heroes of the Reformation. They're figures in history that we look up to as they paved the way for Christianity and our understanding of the Bible today. So there's strong quotes for them. They say that, you know, they quote the Bible, they would quote the Ten Commandments or sing the Ten Commandments, but how do we reconcile or where do we see this in the process or the journey that they would quote the commandments and talk about calling people back to the Ten Commandments, but they didn't follow all of them, namely the Fourth Commandment?
Yeah. I mean, this is a big thing. There, and I can't remember the guy's name, but there were exceptions to that within Sabbatarianism. You had the Seventh-day Baptists. You had others that were all throughout that time. But it was a very thin margin. And I think it was probably because they kind of thought, well, if we get them one day in seven, that's okay. And they didn't seem to really resonate with it. It's not that they didn't know. They heard about it. They knew all about it. And they knew about it since the Council of Trent. In January 18, Archbishop Regio, you know, he brings up this idea that, why do you guys say you're Protestants when you're not following what the Bible says about the Sabbath? So they all knew this, but they kind of made a calculated, almost you might say, Catholic move in saying, let's just have the principle thing, not the actual, you know, specific detail of the Sabbath commandment. So it's like Leslie Harding said to me once, and Leslie Harding wrote a book called Celtic Christianity. He would too bad he wasn't here. He's been dead a number of years, but he said, Don, if I could give you a reason, it would be reasonable. And I think that's a good statement. They had no real good reason for it. I would say this, like King James, let's take King James, for instance. He would be confronted with things, and he simply wouldn't go along with it. And you had this factor playing in that not only had the reformers, but you had the kings and especially the Stuarts. They thought they were divine, and they would get in the mix as well. So, you know, you had those factors, and the reformers, Luther and other people, they ceased being reformers, someone says. And then you had the stepchildren of the Reformation that started seeing these things and bringing them up, and they really came down hard on them.
Hmm.
You know, you have the Zwickau prophets and Munster with Luther calling them Jews, and he was very anti-Semitic. And so you see that happening.
But we still believe that obviously the Reformation and these reformers, as you mentioned, Martin Luther, Tyndale, and these guys, they played a significant role in the rediscovery of truth. And I guess, like you say, if it was reasonable, if there was a reason to be reasonable, we let God do the judging and figure out maybe it wasn't their purpose to spearhead every doctrinal aspect, and that would come later on. I don't know. That's sometimes how I reason it through. Like,
yeah,
his role was to kind of deal with this truth, and later ones dealt with other ones. And
yeah, and of course, I could do a whole program on the benefits that have been documented scientifically for Sabbatarianism.
Mm-hmm.
And especially even the science goes as far as to say it needs to be the seventh day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of data now on that. But they didn't know that.
Yeah.
They had to just accept that, just like they had on basis of everything else with Sola Scriptura, but they kind of dodged it for whatever reason.
Mm. Interesting. It's one of those, I think, complexities of history or complexities, yeah, of characters in history, people that had, yeah. I'm just glad that God is going to be the judge and figure out the thoughts and intentions of each one of our hearts. I think what we'll do, we'll pause for a break here. We'll come back for the last few questions. And I want to come back to unpacking this idea of the commandments and how they're applicable and how they have a role in today's society. We'll come to that after the break, because I think that's really applicable to see how they mesh together and how they're still applicable today. So the reformers pushed them, but they haven't lost their significance and haven't lost their relevance today. This is... interesting. Thank you for being with us. This is the Lineage Journey podcast. We'll be back in a little bit just after our break. Please stay with us as we're going to continue our discussion on the relevance of the commandments today in society.
Lineage is a non-profit organization kept running by generous donors like you. Support us today on patreon.com/lineagejourney.
History shapes identity. Identity shapes mission. And a clear mission determines the trajectory of your future. Knowing where you come from is key to understanding your present purpose and your future mission. Lineage Journey is a series of videos that will take you on a journey through time, discovering the key people and events that have shaped the Christian faith. From the Waldenses to Martin Luther to Zwingli, from England to France, Switzerland to Germany, the light broke over the horizon of Europe, piercing through the Dark Ages, and then spread out over the world. As the United States of America rose to supremacy, Christianity formed the bedrock of this great nation. And so from the Great Awakening to the Great Disappointment and beyond, Lineage follows the journey of God's church throughout time, immersing you in the places, the stories, and the people through whom Christianity has shone the brightest. Join us on a journey through time. Follow us on social media at Lineage Journey, or check out our website at lineagejourney.com.
I recently wrote a book, The Law and Its Logic, Where Atheists and Christians Agree. This is a book everybody needs to read because it's a powerful book that shows how there's a logic within the Ten Commandments that people really, really have bought into. The last five commandments, both Christians and atheists largely agree on in large percentages. I go through the statistics in the book. I show where there's agreement, and then I show where there's disagreement and why that disagreement is the very thing that can help us realize the full potential in our lives. So if you're looking for a book that will stimulate your thought, that will give you fresh thoughts about the meaning of life and about things that are important, whether or not you're a believer, person of faith or not, you're going to find the book fascinating. So check it out. It's on Amazon Kindle. It's also paperback form as well. It's probably the most exciting thing I've written my whole life. So I encourage you to check it out.
Lineage Journey not only produces video content, but instructive and illuminating resources to teach young and old about Christian history. Lineage has produced an educational coloring book for people of all ages. It includes original artwork from Ashley Bloom, highlighting the various heroes of the Reformation. Each scene has a matching story, and there are also QR codes to connect you to the website for more information and to watch the videos. There are also fun facts and memorable quotes to accompany the scenes to color in. Designed for young and old alike, get your copy now at lineagejourney.com.
I'd like to welcome you back from our break. This is the Lineage Journey podcast. I'm here with Pastor Don McIntosh, and we're looking at the subject of the Ten Commandments and the Reformation, and also extending it up to our present day to see their relevance today. Now, just a few minutes ago, you said you were going to kind of unpack a little bit more the role of the Ten Commandments in today's society and how the first table or the first five or six verse four or five, and how the last five or six, how they kind of, they're still, how they're connected, how one's the problem, one's the solution, etc. Remember, I heard you a few weeks ago in England present it. It was a fascinating presentation. So maybe just unpack that a little bit and see.
Okay, first of all, before I get there, you know, what's at stake? They actually did a study, a group recalled 10 books, and they read them. These were books that had to do with, you know, social psychology and social science and how to better yourself. And there was a group that was asked to recall the Ten Commandments. And then both of them were given tests where they could cheat. The ones who read the Ten Commandments didn't cheat at all. The ones that read the other books, they cheated. And then they took another group of four, they took another group of atheists this time. And they reminded them of the school honor codes and, you know, all these different things instead of the Ten Commandments. They got the same result, cheating. So Ten Commandments, they wouldn't cheat. No Ten Commandments, they would cheat. Then they reran the experiment, even on a group of self-declared atheists, asking them to swear on the Bible. And even those atheists did not cheat, the ones that looked at the Ten Commandments. There seems to be some kind of power. I'm not saying some kind of super, some kind of freaked out talismanic power, but I'm saying there seems to be something that happens when people even see the Ten Commandments
as an influence for good.
And that doesn't matter if you're an atheist or not. And that's what we saw, didn't we? In the last part of this program, we saw that both atheists and Christians agree. Title of my book, The Law and Its Logic, where Christians and atheists agree. They both agree on the last five commandments, don't they? They both agree that they don't want those things to happen. They see the logic of that. That's where they agree. Where they don't agree is the first four. So let me unpack how we get to that, okay? So when I'm talking to somebody, I may not even know them, but I'm gonna try and diagnose where they are in this. I already know kind of, because I already know the statistics, but I might just, you know, go down this lane. Here's my line of questioning. Number one, are you satisfied with life? What's your satisfaction level on a scale of 1 to 10? Now they might say if they're very depressed at 2 or 3, you know, and then I might say, well, how could you raise that up? But I just wanna see what the baseline is. A lot of people dissatisfied with life in the UK and America today, they're depressed, they're anxious. They're not satisfied. Number two, what kind of lies do you tell yourself or to other people, you allow other people to tell you? Sometimes we tell ourselves lies. You're not worth anything. You're not valuable. Or you might have plain of mind in your head. You know, my dad said I was stupid. I'd never be anything. My mom said I was a whatever. Or lies. And, you know, people have 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day. The problem is that 90% of them are repetitive and 80% of them are lies. They're not the truth. They're negative. So everybody's fighting against this. So are you satisfied or you're telling yourself lies? Then this next one. Have you ever been stolen from or have you stolen from others? Another way to say that, has you ever been abused or abused someone else? And that strikes at the heart of shame. Because I might be ashamed if I did something to someone else. Mm-hmm. I might be ashamed if something was done to me. I don't want to tell anybody about it, but this is what happened. Mm-hmm. A lot of people walking around with shame, and this causes anxiety. This causes depression. They're not satisfied. Mm-hmm. They got a bunch of lies. They're filled with shame. And then this messes up their intimacy is the next thing. I might ask them, you know, how close are you to people? Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you're close to anybody, really close, like they're your confidant, or you know, you're close to somebody in positive ways. And if they say no, which many times they do, if those other things are factoring in, then that leads me to the last question. Have you ever thought about hurting yourself? Have you ever been angry? Have you ever been bitter? Thought about hurting other people even? And and they might say yes. Now, you maybe didn't recognize it, but that's the last five commandments. Thou shalt not covet, that's be satisfied with what you have. Don't look other places. Thou shalt not bear false witness, that's don't lie. Thou shalt not steal, that's shame and stealing. Thou shalt not commit adultery, that's intimacy. And don't kill, that's don't kill, right? And so I'm talking to people, they don't even know I'm using the Ten Commandments. And I'm already kind of diagnosing what's happening in their life and why. Then I might ask this question, how in the world do you ever get through the day given all that pressure in your life? And they'll tell me, well, I do pornography. Well, I do extreme sports. I live on the edge. Mm-hmm. I do drugs. I do alcohol. I do multiple novel things to try and keep me up because they're doing stuff. They feel so down, they got to do stuff that gets them up. Mm-hmm. They got to do stuff that gets them high, right? And that is really what you see. I'm eating stimulating foods. I'm drinking Red Bull, high caffeine drinks, okay? So that's diagnosis. My suggestion is that in Britain and America also, everybody wants to not experience those last five in terms of the negative, but they are experiencing them. There's depression, there's anxiety, and what they want, they don't have. And one of the reasons is, I think, because of commandment number five. Let's segue to commandment number five before we go to treatment. So commandment number five is, thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother, right? But what is that really? Honor authority figures, okay? Because your father and your mother are an authority figure. Are there any other authority figures in your life? How do you relate to authority, I might ask people. I don't get along with authority. Why not? Because look what they did. How could I ever trust the king when he did this when he was a younger man? How could I ever trust the police when they did this to Rodney King? How could I ever trust the priest when he abused all those people at the parish? How could I ever trust my teacher when this happened or that happened? And so a lot of people have these issues with authority because maybe the authority figure really messed up. So they feel dissatisfied, they feel shamed, they feel, maybe they were abused by a parent physically and their intimacy is messed up and they feel like killing the people or themselves or hurting themselves. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So I've got to figure out how to start to address that real issue, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's diagnosis. All right, you ready for treatment, something positive. Just looking at the Ten Commandments is treatment. We're going to figure that out, right? You just look at them. That's going to help you.
So this is, we're looking at this because this shows the relevance of them still today.
Yeah. So this is the reformation, okay? The last five is deformation. You know, I'm deformed. I'm not satisfied. I feel like I'm lying. Oh, it's stealing, killing.
Right.
I need a reformation in my life, and I need a reformation of authority figures, okay? It's crying out for the reformation. So where is reformation in the Ten Commandments? Well, look at the first commandment. Let me turn it into a question. Have you ever in your life been delivered from anything? You feel like, you know what? That had to be some higher power, some kind of fluke accident, something, but it was definitely not human that got me out of that. Have you ever been delivered from a situation? Look, Take Martin Luther. If you ask him that, what would he say? I was saved, almost hit by a lightning bolt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was delivered from something, right? What would he say to, what would he say to Staupitz? I had all of this agony over angst, over my sins. But then I found this text. I was delivered by that text that I found in Habakkuk, that I found in Romans. The just shall live by faith. I was delivered. So the Reformation was all about deliverance. Wycliffe, mm-hmm. What would he say if you asked Wycliffe what delivered him? What would he say to the people of England? Look, the Lollards are the ones that followed him. That means lullaby. They were singing. Why? Because they're reading the scriptures. It's so opposite.
Mm-hmm.
All the guilt and pain that was coming from the Catholic system. There's all that guilt, there's all that shame, and there's no way out. They just say basically in that system, die and then pay us a bunch of money to get your relatives out of purgatory. That's no deliverance there.
Mm.
But they were saying, wait, the theology is delivering me. So number one, deliverance. And, you know, any store you go into, in America at least, in Britain, they have pictures of people leaving a building. They don't have the word exit as much. But over here we have the exit sign, which means I got you out of that. Exit. So that's commandment number one. If I can get someone to see the hope that has come to them from some kind of supernatural situation or supernatural text, I might recommend the Bible. The Bible has all these stories of people that were delivered. Every hymn book, you go to the church, you open up the hymn book. What's in the hymn book? They're all deliverance stories. I was a wretch. I was blind. Now I see. See what I mean? They're all deliverance stories, and that's why they're so hopeful. So that's number one. And if you can get people thinking that way and they can see that, it helps. Number two, showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. What comes first? Love me and then keep my commandments. Love of God through deliverance, then comes mercy. So mercy and deliverance are the foundation of gratitude.
Mm.
Did God have to take the people out of Egypt? Did he have to deliver Martin Luther? Did he have to protect him with the electors of Saxony? Did he have to help Wycliffe? Did he have to help, you know, all these mm-hmm. people? No, but he did. And he showed them mercy and mercy for their sins. And this is a lot of their writing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those first two things then bring us to commandment number three. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. The way I ask the question is this. So the first one is, have you ever been shown deliverance in any way in your life? Have you ever experienced mercy? And mercy means you didn't deserve it. This is Tyndale's point. We don't deserve anything. We're under wrath.
Mm-hmm.
This is Romans' point. While we were enemies, while we were godless, while we were sinners, Christ died for us. This is mercy, right? So when we see that, then what do? Do we want to live by our rules or God's rules? We know he loves us, so we say, hey, I want to live within your rubric, within your law, because it's a law of liberty for me. I know that if I live within that, see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then the next thing that comes after that, so in other words, I ask the question this way, do you want to live by God's laws as you understand them or your own? If they have a lot of gratitude, they want to live by God's laws. And they have to have that or it becomes legalism. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So then the next thing is that follows on is I'll ask him this question. How do you show your gratitude daily and weekly? Might be your daily devotional life or weekly. It might be keeping a Sabbath day. So the Sabbath then is an expression of gratitude. It breaks the chronic stress cycle. It does all kinds of things health-wise. But these gratitude cycles, both daily and weekly, they bring healing, they bring hope, they bring health. Does that make sense? Then, if I have those in place, what's my experience? I'm no longer having to get high because I'm following the Most High. I have gratitude. I have hope. I experience and I extend mercy. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And my life is just, it's the interesting thing, very interesting, the last five commandments, God's name is not attached to any of them. First five commandments, I, the Lord thy God, brought thee out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, last five just says, don't kill.
Don't kill. God's name is not even associated with them. First five, he's associated with every one. I'm going to show you mercy. Don't take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. Mm. Honor thy father and mother that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. These are all direct allusions to the fact that the Most High is connected with them. And when you follow them, you get Most High. In your presence is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. It's always easier, and this is what happens. When you're following those things, when those things are happening, you're living a life of gratitude because of the mercy and deliverance you've had, then if you start helping other people, you're more satisfied. You stop telling people the truth instead of lies. This brings healing. You never experience the last five if you have the first five in place. And suddenly then the fifth commandment becomes a purpose statement. You become a father and mother for God.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And Paul said it. He says, you know, you are my sons and daughters in God. And that's what you start doing.
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think? Could the Ten Commandments actually be a paradigm that needs to be,
I think so,
re-engaged?
I don't think it's applicable for just Christians. I think it's applicable for people of all faiths. I mean, your book mentions about how atheists agree, but, you know, even the, I think it's applicable. It's a universal principle in the Ten Commandments that applies to all people, no matter what their faith persuasion, I believe.
The book is really built around the story of a guy from England. He actually went to Cambridge. He was a Cambridge graduate, and I used in the book this metaphor of the guy named Tom. That wasn't his real name. But I put other stories from other patients in there, but the main story was built on this guy who was depressed, suicidal, and he came from the UK to our program here in the States.
Hmm.
So, yeah. In fact, by the end of it, when he discovered this, he was like, I have got to know how to pray. I have got to know how to have this happen. I didn't know as much as I know now about the Ten Commandments. But let me share one other thing with you. Here is the absolute amazing revelatory truth of the Old and New Testament. And Tyndale said, you know, we can't really do this. We can't. The law just condemns us. And he's right. But listen to this. The largest quotation from the Old Testament to the New. You know what it is? It's the largest quotation from the old section of the Bible to the new section of the Bible. Here it is. But this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law in their inward parts. I will write it on their hearts. I will be their God. They'll be my people. Listen to that. I'm going to put it in you. You can't do it.
Mm.
But I will do it. And I'll even put it down the inward parts. I will be your God. You'll be my people. That's intimacy. That's
mm-hmm.
no more shame, right? They don't have to teach anyone his neighbor anymore because everyone will know me from the least to the greatest. It's not going to be on boards across England in every church. It's going to be in every heart.
Mm.
So it gets off the wall. It comes into the heart. If it's really the love of God, you see what I mean? And then it says, I will forgive their iniquity. That's deliverance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I will remember their sin no more. That's deliverance. That's mercy. This is actually summarizing the Ten Commandments.
Mm. It's true. What would you say to a listener who's unsure? I mean, a lot of it you've said already, but unsure of the validity or relevance of the Ten Commandments today?
I'd say buy a copy of the Ten Commandments and put it on the wall. Try it out.
Mm.
Try it out. And then start saying it every day. And then think about what I said, because usually when people think about the law, they think it's against us. Mm-hmm. But think about those first four commandments. They're all for us, aren't they? I'm going to deliver you. I'm going to show you mercy. I'm going to give you a prescription that helps you not get in trouble. Mm-hmm. I want to spend a day with you because I'm your creator and redeemer. And I want to give you a purpose in life to be a real purpose in life.
Mm.
I mean, that's the foundation of satisfaction. Just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people just have thought about it the wrong way. I think the law has been misused. And isn't that what it says in 1 Timothy? It's okay for the one who uses it lawfully. It's a law of love. It's a law of liberty. So I would say get a copy of it. Start to memorize it. Meditate on it. Listen to this podcast again. And then start praying that prayer. Say, hey, God, you said you'd write it on my heart. You said you'd write it on my mind. You said that. You'd do that. And just say, hey, look, if you're still there, do it. Mm-hmm. I've said that to many people, and you know what? God's done it for them. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen again and again. It happened to me. Mm-hmm. I was depressed. I was an atheist. I was at the end of my rope, ready to kill myself. Mm-hmm. And God brought me out of it. I'm not talking about something I don't know about. Mm-hmm. This is not like, I haven't been through it.
So the reformers were onto something.
They were onto something.
They were onto something. And God still needs a people today that will recognize the centrality of the Ten Commandments and push that. Where do we see that in end time apocalyptic prophecy?
You know, here's the patience of the saints. Oh, that word patience is hupopomone in Greek, which means they're under extreme pressure. Mm-hmm. Here are they keep the commandments of God and have the faith of Jesus. So there's a group of people at the end of time that are defined by commandment keeping, but notice how it goes. Turn it backwards. The faith of Jesus then leads to obedience to the faith in the context of patient endurance. So it's looking at Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith, the one who will write the law in your heart and mind. And then you're so grateful that you allow him to live out the commandments, to keep the commandments in you, in the context of a very bad situation. So the defining difference, if you're looking for a church, you're looking for a people, they've got to be talking about this according to the book of Revelation.
True. Revelation 12 and 14, I believe, talk about the rise of the remnant movement. Mm-hmm. And in both chapter 12 and 14, and we see the commandments mentioned in 12, 17, and 14, 12.
And then in 22.
And 22, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
It's the key the reformers saw. They may not have turned the key fully.
May not have fully understood it.
But they did to the extent they could, and certainly others followed on to do that. What I would do is look for a church that actually is proclaiming that. Because if you're wanting to learn how to live that and try and find folks like that. But you don't have to. Just start on your own. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. It's been good to unpack the commandments a little bit more. And your book, it's available on Amazon, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
The law and its logic. And its logic.
Where atheists and Christians agree.
Is that on Kindle as well?
Yep, Kindle and paperback.
Okay. So if you're interested in that book, anyone listening, then do go to Amazon. You can check it out. There's a paper copy or a Kindle copy. And this concept of first five, last five, and how the commandments are relevant today is unpacked a little bit more. But thank you, Pastor Don, for being with us and going through this subject of the commandments and seeing how the reformers talked about it. And more importantly, the why it's still relevant today. Because we believe lineage, part of our, I guess, our mission or our purpose or but what we say is that, you know, the past and the present and the future, they're all connected. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to know where we come from, to know why we're here, and then to know where we're going. Mm-hmm. And I think as Christians, we can see that the commandments played a key role in the past. Mm-hmm. Obviously in the Bible, rediscovered in the Reformation, we see how they're still relevant today, practically speaking, as you've mentioned, and some of the points you bring out in your book. But then we also see in the book of Revelation how the end time movement of God's people in chapter 12, in chapter 14, in chapter 22, the commandments are central to them as well. So yeah. I think for us to be faithful today, but also for us to have the most happy lives today, we need to see how the commandments are relevant for our lives.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And of course, in heaven, we're going to be in the most holy place where the commandments are.
The commandments are.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you for those of you who have listened in and tuned in to our podcast, our Lineage Journey podcast. Do follow us on our social media platforms at Lineage Journey on Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube. For more content, check out our website, www.lineagejourney.com. But thank you once again, Pastor Don McIntosh, for being with us and for sharing from your expertise on this important subject. May God bless you. And for those of you who listen, may God bless you as well. Continue to study and to figure out what our purpose and our mission is here in life.
Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Lineage Journey is supported by your generous donations. Did you know that you can donate on a monthly basis? Any amount, from $2 to $100 or whatever you decide, through patreon.com/lineagejourney. Your donations go towards the cost of producing our varied content, and we thank you for your support.